Blog Talk Radio.
And you're listening to Hell in a Cell Radio.
The Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Hell in a Cell Radio.
Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen,
after the holidays, we are finally back. Welcome to another edition of HIAC Talk Radio. I am, of course, the host, the Dean of Credibility, Double D, and you can find me at Folsom County. With me, as always, is the man, the brains, if you will. Well, maybe not the brains, but something behind Obey the Puck.
That's certainly not the brains.
It is the above-average comedian, Dan Colachico.
Hey, happy new year, everybody. Again, you can follow me at DanLaw83 on Twitter or Obey the Puck at Obey Puck Show. 9 o'clock, Monday night.
Yes. Thank you.
Sorry.
And joining us from the very start, it is our MMA and wrestling analyst, Omega Squad, Chris Green. How are you tonight, sir? How was the holidays for you?
The holidays were good. They were quiet, just the way I like them. How was your guys?
Oh, fine. Dan and I saw each other, so.
Okay.
Yeah, we were good.
Good. Well, people can follow me on Twitter at Omega Squad.
That's right. Now, tonight, of course, we are going to be joined in about 8 minutes by the beast Dan Severin. He is making his return to HIAC Talk Radio. Basically, I guess the synopsis of this interview would be, you retired a year ago. What the hell have you been up to?
Yeah.
And that's going to fill an hour of our show tonight. So, we have that. I also want to talk about Old School Raw. Did you guys check it out?
Absolutely.
I did.
You did. Now, one thing I did want to bring up. Now, I got exclusive audio here. Apparently, Jake the Snake Roberts, after the cameras went off the air.
Mm-hmm.
He delivered a promo, just, you know, like the dark match. Here it is.
World Taylor, you know, casino. Everybody says, well, gosh, the casino, you should gamble. Let me tell you something, Hamble. You don't want to play cards with me because I'll cheat. Okay? I cheat. You want to play 21? I got 22. You want to play blackjack? I got two of those, too. You want to play 8 and 8? Maybe I got too many of those, too. Bottom line is this. You do not gamble with me. The only thing you should gamble with this. Listen to me. When you walk in a casino and you want to gamble, the main thing is you should realize this. To gamble, you must accept losing. I don't accept losing. And neither is Damien. Damien, my friend. My friend Damien is right here.
Damien? Yeah, he just stuck his head out of him.
Nice pile of steak, huh?
Oh.
You don't want to see this, do you?
Well,
let me show you something.
Let me show you something.
No, I tell you what, Anvil. Go ahead, Anvil. Roll the dice. Mr. Cameraman, get your ass back up here. Hello? I'm talking to you. Get the camera back up here. That is not what you need to worry about, Anvil. The bottom line is this. When the DDT comes, then the snake comes out. Worry about the DDT. 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 Think about it.
A man of his word, Jake the Snake Roberts.
Back to ringside.
Certainly, certainly a man of his words. I thought that was great, you know, for Jake to come back and deliver a classic promo such as that for the old school Raw fans.
You want blackjack? I taught two of those too.
No, that was aces and eights. He had two of Dan.
Oh, no, he's...
I got 21.
You got 21. I want 22. You want to play blackjack? I want 22. I got two of those too. You want to play aces and eights? Oh man.
Oh, I got too many of those. For aces and eights.
Anyway. Yeah, it's just, and I don't think he did one wrestling hold that whole match.
No,
did they officially have a match that night?
I can't. Yeah, there was. It was a tag team match, Dan.
I can't remember.
It was. It was Jake and King Kong Bundy.
Oh joy!
Taking on the Anvil and. I want to say Yokozuna, but I'm probably wrong.
I'm not even going to look it up.
Yeah, I'm probably wrong in that. Not worth looking up, but old school Raw we'll talk about a little bit later on. We'll probably talk about UFC. I do want to talk about very briefly with you, Omega, UFC Fight Pass. Now, of course, it was announced an hour before UFC 168. They made a big deal, big press conference. Similar to what WWE will be doing during our interview with Dan Severn tonight.
Breaking news.
But what I do want to say is UFC Fight Pass, you've had a chance to look at it. You, of course, looked at the Singapore fight. What do you think of UFC Fight Pass? Is it worth, in the final analysis, the $9.99 that will start to be charged March 1st?
I'm torn on that one. Right now, I mean, it depends on what kind of value you place on old fights. If you're the type of fan that goes back and watches stuff religiously, it should be valuable to you. They need to work on their user interface desperately.
Yes.
It is so bad. It is so hard to find things. They need to update the search functions. I'd like to see them actually take events and break them apart into matches. I think they've done it with some of the events, but not all of them.
The pay-per-views.
Yeah,
typically broken apart, and you can actually do a quad view. You can pick the camera view you want, the red corner, the blue corner, an overhead if you'd like, the fence cam.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They have all those archived?
Oh, yeah, for the pay-per-view.
Yeah. So, I mean there's weeks of content on there right now, and, you know,
Ultimate Fighters, I think that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's good, too. I mean, you can't really argue with the content because the content's all there. It's everything they've done. They've got the Affliction cards. They got hopefully they might eventually have the Strike Force cards.
I'm hoping.
The WEC stuff. I mean, all that stuff should be there. It should be an MMA, you know, repository.
Right now, you can get the Best of Pride. Those episodes are there. I didn't see much WEC content. I didn't see any Strike Force content either. Now, they have been updating things. Like, when I first got the pass, this is probably as soon as Dana White said, Fight Pass, go to UFC.tv and sign up. I did. And at that time, they didn't have the classic UFC section. That has been added, where you have UFC 1, UFC 2, UFC 3, UFC 4, which was the debut of Dan Severn, UFC 5, the first one he won. But that wasn't there. So maybe it's just there's so much stuff you have to upload to servers, and maybe it's just taken a while.
Yeah. No, I think, I'm sure it's taken. I read somewhere that this is like a beta version of it, and they're just kind of rolling it out now. I don't know why they decided to roll out a beta version of it. I guess they were just trying to
Wouldn't you want to capitalize? Put the best foot forward?
Yeah, I would think, but I think maybe they just wanted to do all their international fights. I mean, they ran out of time because they wanted to do all of 2014's international fights on this service.
What do you think of that, though? Do you think I personally don't care. The fights thus far, I mean, it was an interesting night of fights, certainly, and Singapore is a great country, but they didn't have Bruce Buffer there. It's their B commentary team. I don't know.
I just don't see me paying for that.
Oh, I certainly would. I would do it for the library at my fingertips.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only thing. I mean, certainly for this podcast, it's a great resource. But and if you're like, if you want to say, if you want to go back and revisit fights, absolutely, it's a great resource. If you're just a fight fan who just watches the fights and then okay, yeah, and then moves on, no, I don't think it's going to be worth your $10 a month to watch the international fights, because they're really not going to put that their best guys on there. Maybe one or two. I mean, other than Alexander Gustafsson, I think is on their London card
in March.
In March, I mean, so that's one I do want to see, but. Would it be enough to make me pay the $10 a month? I don't think so.
You know, the good thing is, and this is the last thing I want to leave with before I give Dan a call, is if you're not someone who shells out the $50, $55 to see the pay-per-view, just wait 3 or 4 weeks. UFC 167 is already up. So you can digest that. I think from UFC 162 until UFC 167. And then, of course, several fights are broken down. If you go to the collections, I think it's Fight Library you click on, and then over in Fight Library they have it broken down by years, so you could see different fights.
Do they plan on doing that in the long run, or is this just because Fight Pass is brand new that they have one of the recent pay-per-views up that quick?
I think that would probably be the way. The most recent pay-per-view will, you know, as the next one comes in, when UFC 170 comes in, they'll probably put 169 archive there.
See that?
I don't know, though.
That's a fantastic sounding idea, and I hope that's true. That's one of the things, if you compare it to you and I privately, were to the WWE Classics, is why they never did that with a WWE pay-per-view. It's like, you know, the new one's coming out in a week. Why are they not taking advantage of the...
Well, they were always like 6 months behind, if I recall.
Yeah, it's about that. It's about 6 months, yeah. 5 or 6 months. And they're like, well, I'm not watching this now, you know?
I've already digested that information. Yeah. They should have had it more, but whatever. And then WrestleMania was never on there, which makes a hell of
very,
a lot of
sense. Zero sense.
But switching gears, let's talk about a guy who didn't appear in WrestleMania, but he appeared in so many other different things. And former two-time NWA World Champion, has the fourth longest reign in the history of that title lineage.
That's
also
amazing.
Also a USC Hall of Famer. He has over 100 wins on his career. Just digest that. Most guys retire with maybe about 30 fights. He won 100. I believe he had 125 fights. Correct me if I'm wrong, Omega. Something like that.
But yeah, it's like 127 fights.
Wow.
Recorded fights.
Yeah, because there's more. I mean, there's disputed fights on his record. So, but without much further ado, I'm going to press the dial button. Here we go. Now, if I don't get him here, I do have a cell. This is the office. Hi, is Dan
Hello?
Severn there? Yes, is Dan Severn there?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Yeah, is this Dan?
Hi, Dan. This is Dean from HIEC Talk Radio. How are you doing tonight, sir?
Doing good there, Dean.
And you're also with Dan and Chris Green. So I just wanted to start this out. You've been retired a year now. What have you been up to?
Well, how much time do we have?
We have plenty of time, sir.
I've been quite busy. I got a submission grappling program off the ground at Arizona State University. And I'm back in Michigan right now, and I will have a mixed martial arts program that will get underway at Olivet College on the 13th of January. So I'll be bouncing between the two states. I think I'll be the first former MMA competitor to be doing something like this on any type of university-type basis.
Okay. Okay. Now, when you retired, you did went three fights. I believe you said you wanted Ken Shamrock, you wanted Mark Coleman, or Gracie, I think it was.
I would say that if I was to ever even consider coming out of retirement, it would have been for one of those three individuals. I would have liked to have finished up my career really with the three of them one last time. For old time's sake, you know?
Well, yeah, definitely. I think that would have been it never got out of the talking stage. Nothing could come through on either side.
Basically, I mean, I spoke to both Ken and to Mark directly, and they both agreed to do matches. It just didn't seem like it ever came around to fruition. It was first about, well, catch weights, because I'm so much bigger than them now. But if you were to go back in time to see at the time when they faced me, they were weighing right around 250 and 260 themselves. And now they're both 205 pounders.
Dan, do you think you would have done better at a lighter weight class, or could you even make that level?
Well, realistically, I don't think that would have been realistic whatsoever. Even in my latter days of my amateur wrestling, I would compete at the 220-pound weight class, and at the 220-pound weight class, I mean, I was cutting from basically about 250 pounds in the first place. So, I've always stayed pretty much right around my same weight class.
Cool. So, you mentioned you're doing these seminars and classes. Are you doing any kind of training of any active fighters now, or are you just training like college kids wanting to get in?
The mixed martial arts class that we take place at Halifax College, that's basically an adult class, anyone above 18 years of age. So I'm sure that there will be people that will come in there and sooner or later will aspire to. But to answer your question directly, am I training anyone that's looking to jump onto a pro level? No. I foresee that will probably happen, because that seems like the natural chain of events that happens when people start getting involved in a class. The eventuality, they think, well, maybe I would like to compete. I always try to steer them into doing submission grappling matches first, because to be choked out or to be armbarred is one thing, but to have someone kick you upside the head or slam you with an elbow into the head, that's a whole different thing. It's, the pro rules for mixed martial arts is the unified rules, and that is, pretty much utilized, the world over. As for the amateur rules, they're really... isn't a national governing body. It deviates from state to state. And I believe I have some of the best rules put together right now for the amateur ranks. And that's something that I will probably be working more and more on through for the future.
So are you involved with the athletic commissions then, trying to develop new rules or improve the rules as we go forward?
Well, I mean, honestly, I've been involved with quite a few different athletic commissions in various states. Even when No Holds Barred was first being changed over slowly into the mixed martial arts scene, I was invited to sit in on all types of athletic commission boards to have my two cents worth of input. So, I mean, I've always felt very honored that they would think of me in that type of a capacity. But at the same token, I was probably older than most of the commissioners and had been around the block once or twice, so kind of knew what should probably take place. Even when the Ultimate Fighting Championships came underneath some of the most greatest scrutiny at the time, when they referred to it as human cockfighting, and the decline of civilization as we know it, who was the athlete representative that they brought in? Me. Because I don't have tattoo one on me. I don't have body piercing one on me. I have a married man with kids, educated, the whole nine yards, so I did not fit the profile whatsoever. But, you know, as people have come to find out, that a lot of the current mixed martial arts competitors, they all are very unique and are educated in their various fields.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Now, you mentioned, just kind of going back to your start in UFC, your first, you started off in UFC 4 against Royce Gracie, and you spent 15 minutes in his guard. How did you feel you had the fight well in hand up until the point he got the triangle to end it?
I felt quite comfortable in the position that I was in. I mean, for your listeners that may be hearing what you said, you know, there needs to be a little bit more background, I guess, information to really set the stage. The reality is, I was a last-minute fill-in. I had a little bit more time than what I actually prepared for, but I had obligations. I went and fulfilled my obligations. I trained for 5 days, an hour and a half a day, and I walked into a world of no-holds-barred fighting. For your listeners who don't know what that means, the product that they watch on television, mixed martial arts, has approximately 37 rules. Part of those 37 rules, there are weight classes, there are time periods, athletes wear gloves, and they fight one opponent any given evening. Back in the no-holds-barred era, there were two rules that the athletes had to abide by. That being, do not bite your opponent. Rule number two, do not stick fingers in their eye sockets. No eye gouging. End of the rules. Anything that your imagination can think of, you are good to go. No weight classes, no time periods, bare-knuckled action, and it was an eight-man tournament. You had to face and defeat three opponents in a two-hour pay-per-view. So a whole different commodity whatsoever. Now going back into, as I said, I only trained for 5 days, an hour and a half a day. The abundance of cages, like now, were not what they were like when it first began. You couldn't find a cage. There was only one cage, and that was the Ultimate Fighting Championship. So I trained inside of a professional wrestling ring, was the closest thing I could find, against one of the instructors of the professional wrestling thing. It was his name, Al Snow, and two of his other wrestling proteges, and they had one old pair of boxing gloves between the three of them. And all they did was rotate until they got tired and gave it to the next guy and then to the next guy. And then what they were attempting to do was trying to punch and kick at me, and I would either avoid their range or close the distance as quickly as I possibly could, clinching them, taking them down, and slapping on amateur wrestling techniques and turning them illegal to make them scream or squawk. So without any formal training an hour and a half a day for 5 days, not training a single strike, not training a single, as I said, legitimate submission, and I walked into the world of no holes barred fighting, and I fared just fine. Nobody else could have ever walked into my world of amateur wrestling, 5 days of training, an hour and a half a day, and would have came nowhere near as to what I did. And to be in that match with Royce Gracie, as I was sitting at the 20th anniversary show, and I'm hearing the questions that were being asked. Is it much like the question that you asked me just now, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, I wonder what those questions would be like today. Had I done what I know I'm capable of doing? So, yeah. To answer your question, or to give a little bit more insight, I should say, yeah, I tapped. Did I tap because someone beat me, or did I tap because I was unwilling to do what I had to do to another human being? I was going against 26 years of rules and regulations and sportsmanlike conduct that had been instilled in me in the sport of amateur wrestling. I always tell people I struggled more with my conscience than I ever did an opponent. And even when you go back and look at this, as you see several minutes into the match before I finally do strike, I actually have to think about that. And even when I do strike, it's peripheral to the side and nothing directly straight down. So going back to the opener right there, would I like to have three more matches with three different individuals? Yes, I would have. Because their weights have differed quite a bit. You wonder, how can they have lost that much weight? Well, those on the inside probably know more how they probably got so little that once again, I've stayed all the same size the entire time. Had I gone on the same chemical regimen, I would have weighed probably 3 1/4. Ripped at about 6% body fat, but I can look at myself in the mirror and know that I have achieved all my success on my own ability.
That's fantastic. So we lost the UFC 4 in the final fight against, you know, an absolute legend in Hoist Gracie. UFC 5, you come in. Are you prepared at that point? Obviously now you've trained for this no holds barred fighting, and you're walking into a 8-man tournament. Where are you prepared? So was it easier? Did you feel better walking into UFC 5 where ultimately you won the tournament? And obviously you were successful, as you said.
That's right. I took out 32 days of my life, and I trained to be a nose barred fighter. There were no manuals, no DVDs, no VHS tapes, no books. I put my entire workout routine together myself.
Yeah, so how did you feel getting into that cage then when you ultimately won? I mean, that you had that brutal fight with Oleg Taktarov there in the semifinals and ultimately pretty much steamrolled the finals. Did you feel accomplished in this, or was there some part of you that was unsatisfied because you didn't come in and weren't immediately successful?
No, I mean, I was definitely satisfied with what I did in UFC number 5.
Okay, yeah, okay.
I couldn't have done anything more differently or have had any more success than what I did in UFC number 5. So, I mean, to think about UFC number 4, I never really thought about that at that point in time. It was what it was at the time, and I moved on.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about UFC 6. Now, you got in there with Shamrock, and he got you when you went for a shoot, if I recall correctly. I haven't seen the fight in a little while. But he caught you in a choke. How disappointing was that? Because I believe this was the first super fight that they had. It was the super fight championship. So, I mean, what was that like?
Yeah, I mean, no, they held one before that between Hoist Gracie and Ken Shamrock, and then the second super fight that ever took place was Shamrock and myself. So just being out there in a super fight at the situation was, that's basically, you can say the super fights is what the mixed martial arts was morphed into, you know, because almost all these are all individual bouts. In the first place. So it was just an individual bout. 8-man tournament was still taking place at the time. I had mixed emotions at that point in time because to me, in order to be put into a super bout type of situation, I come from the world of amateur wrestling. In order to be involved in any kind of a super fight type scenario, you should have won something. And at that time, Kent had not won any of the Ultimate Fighting Championships. He was not even a runner-up at that point in time. So for him to be involved in the super fight, to me, you know, really was not a super fight. It just, it did not merit it. But again, that's because of my background in amateur wrestling.
Mm-hmm. Now, fast forward a few years later, when you guys were both part of the WWF roster, during the early part of the Attitude Era, as they call it,
Was there still any animosity or anything between you two, or that was all water under the bridge by that point?
I think there still was some things that carried forth. I mean, it's nothing that I really brought to the table. There was just me, professional wrestling. I don't call it wrestling; it's wrestling. There's the sport of amateur wrestling, and then there's wrestling. It's a entertainment product. And so I look at this way. It is what it is. I took part of it. I enjoyed it for what it is. Matter of fact, I still continue to do professional wrestling.
Oh, up until this point? So do you take, bookings for different promotions?
Bookings.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Is it wrestling bookings, or is it just appearances and seminars, things of that nature?
Well, I mean, yes, all of the above. I mean, it's I do a number of different things, as you were asking, what have I been doing? Well, I mean, it's I do professional wrestling. I will do I do a lot of appearances at mixed martial arts shows. I do a lot of either submission grappling and or mixed martial arts seminars or amateur wrestling seminars, three different types. You know, inside the United States, we predominantly focus on folk style. We're the only country that does our folk style. The two international styles being freestyle and Greco-Roman, those are what are competed at the Olympic Games and at the World Championships. So, I mean, I'm versed in all those different fields. I've been teaching law enforcement since 1994, corrections since 1995. I've worked with our military, Border Patrol, air marshals. I mean, it's... I could probably continue going on. I mean, it's... What don't I do? Let's put it that way.
Well, what don't you do?
I do pretty much all of it, and I have a certain level of success with it all.
Are you still involved with Price of Glory? Is that still going on?
Yes. It's a little bit dormant during the winter months here, but then come spring again, it'll keep right back into action.
Now, how involved are you in Price of Glory?
Limited.
Okay.
I enjoy being part of professional wrestling. When I first got involved with it, I just realized there were no real instruction manuals, or it's just something that is just handed down from one wrestler to another, and it differs quite a bit from what part of the country you are from.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, my gift is physical mechanics from the world of amateur wrestling. I've actually been teaching amateur wrestling since 1972. I've been teaching amateur wrestling. So knowing how to put together lesson plans, I have a teaching degree from Arizona State, so being able to put together lesson plans so they actually, there's an objective in that. I put a lot of organization and to professional wrestling, so that my athletes, when they prepare themselves, that they will be able to protect themselves. Because the thing about professional wrestling is, a lot of people think, well, it's that fake stuff, but no professional wrestler ever likes to hear the word fake. It may not be a real athletic contest, but these are real athletes doing some of the most incredible athletic maneuvers without the aid of a safety net. Most professional wrestlers don't even realize that they learn the most basic art of martial arts, break, falling, and things of that nature, how to disperse impact throughout as much body mass as possible. So, I mean, I bring a lot of, I'll say, education and knowledge when it comes to, doing moves and doing things that will protect yourself. You know, ironically, I've been hurt far worse in my professional wrestling career than I have been in my entire cage fighting career. And that's almost like a contradiction in terms, because how is that possible when one is legit and one is not?
Good point.
Dan, what do you teach law enforcement? Because I generally don't know, and I'm genuinely curious as to what kind of classes do you teach at, you know, the National Guard and those guys? What, because they're obviously combat trained, right?
Well, mixed martial arts has influenced all areas. You know, law enforcement knows now that there's actually a new criminal element. It's not just the normal criminal. I mean, you gotta realize when people are inside. Let me back up a moment. On any Friday, Saturday night, you can go to any basic bar, sports bar, whatever, and you're gonna see someone there with a tap out T-shirt and a Flixen ball cap, or vice versa. That has had one too many barley pops, and when you talk to them, they're all training for an upcoming cage fight. Now, they're not, but they like to brag and boaster because of the liquid libations that they have partook of, makes them a little bit bigger and bolder than what they are. So that's where, you know, more and more officers are realizing that, you know, the normal individual that they have to deal with, you know, they watch enough of the Ultimate Fighter show. You know, you can jump on the internet and you can see all types of submission techniques and stuff like this taking place. Even prisoners who are in jail or in prison, they have television access most of the time, and again, they're watching these same types of techniques. And you realize a prisoner, they have nothing but time on their hands. They're usually, most prisoners are actually in better shape than what their guards are. We're supposed to be watching over them because they're doing push-ups and pull-ups and sit-ups and then working on techniques. So, I mean, really going back to what you originally asked me, my specialty, because there's all kinds of specialties in these areas, my specialty work with law enforcement and correction is I have a specialty ground defensive tactics program. It differs from one field to the other field because the uniforms are different, the equipment that they wear is different, same way on the military. You get a look at what are they wearing, what kind of equipment do they have on. So each one, there are similar aspects, but taught entirely different because of uniform, equipment, you know, things of that nature.
Okay, Dan, I do have a caller, and he does have a question for you, so I'm going to put him on. This is one of our frequent callers. His name is John from Rhode Island. John, go ahead and ask Dan your question.
Hi, Dan. How are you?
I'm grand there, John.
Doing great. My question for you is, during your run in WWE, was there any rib stories when you had your feud around with Owen Hart? And did you ever consider having, and one other thing, was there ever a dream match you had when you had your run in WWE in the time when it was WF during the Attitude Era?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was, you know, getting to know Owen was actually great because he had a phenomenal sense of humor. You know, he really loved being the Blue Blazer. It was kind of like his alter ego, and he had a lot of fun with that. As I got to know him, I mean, he even opened up with me more, and he said that, he even told me at one point in time that, he goes, Danny says, you'll never remember this, but says, I used to watch you when you came up to Ontario and would compete in the Canadian Cup. It was a freestyle wrestling event where, you know, the United States versus Canada versus a couple other countries that would be in there, and I was one of the participants for the American team, so he, you know, basically told me that he used to watch me there, and then my time when I was up there at the Hart residence, and they were, you know, sitting up in the living room there with his dad, Stu, while they were setting up all the cameras and sound system and stuff like that for the dungeon match between Ken and Owen, whereas I was the special referee being brought in with that. So to sit in, you know, the Hart residence and to be talking with Stu, you know, something very memorable. And like I said, it was a great loss to the wrestling community, you know, for the death of Owen. I don't know. Sorry, what was the second question? You had like a two-part question.
Yeah, my second question, was there ever a dream match that you had there that you would hope you would have a match with when you were there?
Well, actually, you know, not really there. I mean, you know, that question was posed to me a number of years back, but the way it was posed was whether with the current roster of wrestlers or anyone from the past, living or deceased. And ironically, I had a trip over to England at the time, and I told the interviewer at that point in time that was such an interesting question I'd not been ever asked that before. So let me give that some thought over the weekend, and then I would get back to him. So I went up and did my thing, traveled back, and I was late on a Sunday night or whatever. I was typing back my answer, and I emailed it off to him. Well, the next day he calls me up. He says, first off, my reply was, and again, I can't remember it verbatim, but it was something to the effect that, I was asked, I was posed a question I had never been asked before, wanted to really think about it, and I said that from the Attitude Era, some of the names that would be logically brought into the equation would have been going up maybe against a Stone Cold Steve Austin, you know, The Rock, Hulk Hogan. You know, those were some of the biggest stars still at that time period. And but I've always been referred to as a throwback from days gone by. So kind of with that said, more along the lines of Bruno Sammartino, you know, going against the likes of that. And after doing a little bit more research, I looked at the history of the National Wrestling Alliance belt, and the longest holder was Lou Thesz. And I had met Lou on a number of occasions in Japan and in the United States, and he's the gentleman basically who gave me my replica of the National Wrestling Alliance belt when he was the president of the National Wrestling Alliance. President of the Cauliflower Alley Club. And so I said my response, I said, you know, I as much as Ric Flair has always claimed to be the man, there really is only one man, and that was Lou Thesz. So my dream match would have been against Lou Thesz. Well, the following day on a Monday, you know, this interviewer called me back. He says, do you know what happened to Lou? I says, no. I said, what happened? Well, he had passed away that weekend, and unbeknownst to me. And he just thought that was kind of, I'll call it either ironic, spooky, or whatever, that I had that answer, and then I had to be at, you know, kind of a memorial for Lou, and I basically read my response because I felt that highly of Lou.
Right. Okay. Well, I appreciate your touching, and have a great clear NV7, and I wish you the best of luck. And great talking to you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so that was John from Rhode Island. Dan, you had a question now. My Dan, not you.
Oh, thank you. Dan, if you were asked to come back to the WWE on a backstage basis to maybe, like, to school the rookies or the trainees, would you ever want to do that, or would you rather do that in the MMA world?
You know, it's I don't know really what I could add to the professional wrestlers other than maybe some other character type of traits in that. And I guess that would actually almost fall for both categories. It's there's more to it than just competition. There's you gotta watch yourself in different aspects. You wanna make certain I'm a big, I tend to sit back and I tend to people watch a great deal because in everything there's good and bad. And you want to make sure that you associate and affiliate yourself with the people that, that you want to be. I want to be associated with positive people that are moving in the right direction. Otherwise, you're going to just head down the wrong path, and there's a lot of distractions in both industries, probably more in the wacky world of professional wrestling. That's where I learned the cliche, never say never, say how much. Because even the most heinous act has a price tag attached to it.
Wow. Would you ever consider going to work for Impact Wrestling, or is that not even in question?
Well, they have, well, in my opinion, they've got a lot of issues right there.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of surprised that they're still afloat. But
yeah,
it must mean that someone still has some deep pockets and wants to continue to throw good money after bad. And I don't mean that against the athletes. You know, the athletes, they're just looking for an opportunity to entertain people and stuff like that. But, you know, they just need some different leadership, that's for sure.
Now, a few years ago, you were involved with Ring of Honor. Would you consider going back there, or is that completely out of the ballgame now?
Well, I mean, I was brought in just for a couple special type reasons. I mean, I would be, you know, still involved with professionalism if, you know, if the right scenario was, you know, brought to me in the first place. What that is, I couldn't tell you, but, you know, I always say that, you know, I would have still been with the WWE, you know, had the right scenario continued on, but there was a little bit of a difference, and so I just kind of just, you know, exercised my right to kind of move on.
Yeah.
Dan, after the career you've had, when you go back, like, you say you're sitting in your office or just sitting in the chair in the living room, what makes you smile more, memories in the wrestling world or memories in the MMA world?
Well, I mean, they'll all have, there's different, I'm in the process of writing a book, for example. I've actually been writing it for a number of years.
Very nice.
The bad part is I've got too much content now. You know, you got to realize, I won my first national title in the sport of amateur wrestling back in 1972. Mm. You guys were born when?
Not 1972.
my point is, I was not a one-time, you know, one thing. When I say I've been terrorizing athletes in different fields for decades, I have been doing it for decades.
Oh, yeah.
To start an MMA career, when I started back in 94, just prior to turning 37 years of age, find anyone else who ever did that. Then when you look at the success, I mean, I don't think anyone else has had as much success as what I have had. I'm lifetime chemical free.
Mm-hmm.
Leave that one alone, but try to find another pro heavyweight make that claim.
I think
that's where, I mean, it's in the aspects of all that. I mean, it's just, you know, but I was the anomaly in the world of professional wrestling world. I mean, it was, you know, to be there and to see, you know, be sitting back in the locker room and just seeing people pull out bottles of this, bottles of that, and then looking at each other and asking what each other has and swapping out their space and stuff like this. And, yeah, I mean, they were kind to me. They were like, "Dan, you care for something?" I go, "I'm good. You know, appreciate the offer, but I'm good." But at the same token, I've outlived an awful lot of people. That's one of the tragedies of the sport of professional wrestling, is the fact that there's a category known as professional wrestlers that did not live to see 40 years of age. You're not dying of natural causes prior to 40. Usually it's due to chemical cocktails.
Mm-hmm.
But that is part of the hard lifestyle of being pro, because at the time I was working for the WWF, the average wrestler was working 187 days.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think about, that's a lot of dates on the road. That doesn't include travel to and travel back from. And then the stars, they even have more, because they're out there doing all these various additional promotions for upcoming, whatever WrestleMania is or whatever pay-per-view that's taking place that particular month. It's a tough lifestyle, and And a lot of wrestlers, they need something to pick them up in the morning. You know, they need to go to the gym. So that, you know, and because no one's paying to watch pasty white fat guys go out there. So you know, they're hitting tanners, they're going to the gym, they're doing steroids, they're doing growth hormones, and in the process of doing that many matches, of course you're getting banged around. And you need some painkillers, muscle relaxers, what other types of antibiotics you might be on. And then they, you know, they're taking something to put them down at night. And then you mix that with some alcohol. That's why I refer to it as the chemical cocktail that does most of them in. And then when they perform the autopsy, then they find the enlarged heart and everything else that goes along with the lifestyle of the chemical cocktails.
Dan, with your extensive amateur career, I wanted to get your opinion on this. Olympic wrestling got a scare over the summer when it was dropped from the Olympics and then eventually reinstated. Do you think that if eventually the wrestling is dropped from the Olympics, will that hurt amateur wrestling? Or is the popularity of mixed martial arts and submission wrestling enough to sustain the sport as it is today?
Well, I mean, it's... I'd answer that in a couple of different ways. First off, for them to even think about dropping wrestling from the Olympic Games was absurd when I first became aware of. Yeah, it's only been reinstated, but reinstated on a kind of a temporary type basis. It's not out of the woods yet, but it is at least on a temporary type basis. Just like in anything else, there's some corruption, there's some money involved. Maybe you don't have some of the right people that are at the helm of the leadership of this. You know, for the fact that the Olympic Games, one of the first original activities or sporting events of the Olympic Games was wrestling. Wrestling and track and field would have been your first. One and two, and to take wrestling out, I mean, you allow some people are not going to care for this, but you're going to allow badminton, you're going to allow ping pong, you're going to allow equestrian. Last I thought is that Olympic Games are supposed to pit one individual against another, just because you own a better horse than me, you know. So now we're putting animals and stuff like that ahead of the actual athletes. And I don't even know what that one little gymnastics ribbon twirling type of thing that they do out there. But if you take wrestling out, you're going to have ugly goony wrestlers ballerining around twirling ribbons then.
I don't want to see that.
Of course, I don't know. That might bring some rankings up there for the Olympic Games.
So do you think if Olympics does drop, it will... Will it still be as strong as it is now because MMA has gotten so huge?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, definitely that MMA has had a strong influence, especially when you look at, I think, probably 8 or 9 out of the top 10 guys per weight class all have amateur wrestling backgrounds. It's easy to take a wrestler and to teach them some striking and or submission grappling skills. It's tough to go just the opposite, right? If you had just a boxer and then to try to teach them the intricacies of wrestling. Wrestling is body position, is body control. It doesn't teach submissions. But, you know, if you take a wrestler who has had a level of success and then you transform them into the sport of mixed martial arts, they already have a certain work ethic. And they have a drive and determination. So it's easy for them to adapt and to add new things to their repertoire. I mean, I coached at both Arizona State. I coached at Michigan State. I worked with the Michigan Wrestling Club. I have been involved in the sport of wrestling since 1969. So as a coach, I would be refereeing sometimes a match, you know, to settle a weight class for an upcoming dual meet or tournament for that weekend. And you'd see two athletes so closely matched in skill and getting so frustrated with each other that eventually they would break out into fisticuffs. And now you should be just giving green light to a wrestler. I mean, that's where wrestlers dominate in the ground and pound category alone, just taking people down and pounding on them. But, you know, like I said, the sport has evolved immensely from where it first started to where it is today. And I think in another 3 to 5 years, you'll see even the next evolution of the mixed martial arts.
Okay. Now, we were talking earlier, you brought up that you're in the process of writing a book. It's been in the process for a while. Is there a timetable on this book, or is it still kind of being fleshed out at this point?
Well, actually, I just recently signed with a group in Arizona that, you know, has been telling me that that's one of the things that's on the table, is that they can help bring my book to fruition. And
okay.
Basically, from what I've seen already, that they said it's going to be a series of probably at least 3 books because I have too much content. You know, literally when I say I've got over 1,000 pages, on one page there may only be 2 or 3 sentences that say Leipzig, East Germany, Russian negotiations, lots of vodka. Now those 3 or 4 lines probably will lead into a 10 to 15 page story. There used to be an East Germany. I was there 3 different times to see the Iron Curtain and the Berlin Wall. You know, I was in the first 2 times I was in Russia. Wasn't known as Russia. Was known as the Soviet Union. Cold War era. United States versus Russia. Oh, I should say Soviet Union. Cold War era. Each country puffing off their chest. And that's where I learned the word propaganda as well. So it's been quite the education over the years. So I think there'll be a lot of insight. And you know, as I said before, I mean, yeah, I went to Arizona State. I ended up getting an education there. But I think my best education has been through travel and meeting people and seeing and doing.
Okay, so last time you were here, I asked you your legacy, how you wanted to be remembered, and you had a little difficulty coming up with the answer. It kind of stumped you. Now a year has passed since you retired from MMA. How do you want to be remembered, whether it's MMA, pro wrestling, or the Olympic amateur wrestling? How do you want to be remembered?
I tell you what, that's kind of ironic that you asked that question. I think it has been defined more over this past year. And actually for none of those categories, but simply to making a difference. I've impacted so many different lives in so many different fields. I mean, that's literally when I started looking at all the various emails that I have gotten over the years, the decades, the letters and stuff like this, and even some of the more, I mean, was within just the past week, of the inspiration not to go climb into a cage, not to go climb, although I hear that a lot from mixed martial artists and stuff like that. But I would rather just know that I made a difference. I motivated people.
Okay. That's, last time
when you look at the ring name, The Beast.
Yeah.
Has a lot of negative connotations. Anyone that knows me knows I'm not a negative person whatsoever. So I wanted to turn a negative into positive. So I look at, okay, the word "the" stands for Dan Severn. I'm a teacher, humanitarian, and I'm an educator. My message to young people is beast. To believe in yourself, to educate yourself, to adjust your everyday attitude, to study hard, and then to teach others. So I took what was been a negative and I turned it into a positive, because I've been that way, I mean, pretty much my entire life. You know, as I said, started teaching amateurs back in 72. So I've helped people. I've been an educator. So to actually get a degree from Arizona State in the field of education, I'm thinking, well, gee, I've already been teaching since 1972, actually prior to it, but I was just use that as my time point. And then you look at what I've been doing for law enforcement, corrections, air marshals, border patrols, and as I said, even the military has been influenced by mixed martial arts, except the bad part is they teach predominantly jujitsu. I hate that. You know, some people say, well, what's wrong with that? I go, well, when you look at all the gear that a soldier wears, you don't want to be teaching people to do submissions, locks, or holds. It's not playing half out. Because when I was my first time being on base, and I was they're showing me what they're doing, the commander who actually had the influence of bringing me on base, and you know he's holding out their training manual, and he says, "Well, what do you think of this?" I said, "Sir, would you like me to answer you honestly?" And he's like, well, "Yeah." I took his manual and I threw it in the garbage. Now I went over, I picked it up, dusted it up, handed it back to Michael. I said, "I mean no disrespect." I said, but you are teaching my military, the people who represent me, how to play submission locks. That's not what I want my military to be able to do. I want my military to be able to extinguish someone's life as quickly, as quietly, and as effortlessly as possible. I want my military to come back. I don't care about the enemy. But that's my humble opinion.
Yeah, definitely. Now, if people are interested in booking you for an appearance or for one of your seminars, you have three different seminars that people can definitely check out. Where can they go? Where can they find more information from you?
Well, just go to my website at dansevern.com. I mean, it's like a three-ring circus because, as you guys found like the tip of the iceberg, I do a number of different things, and I do bounce back and forth, and I probably, at least a couple times a year, I actually drive also back and forth to from Michigan to Arizona. But, I mean, I've been to every state in the United States. By the end of this month, I will be on the East Coast, back in New Jersey, New York, North and South Carolina, Georgia, and at the top of the north part of Florida. So, I mean, I'll be hitting those half a dozen different states, just doing various seminars as I travel through. So, I in a lot of ways, I always tell people I live a very charmed life. I simply know I can travel the entire United States and always have a roof over my head and a meal on the table. Because I treat people right, and they like to be around me. They like to hear what I have to say.
Are you coming back? This is just a personal question, but are you coming back to Master McKenzie School in Voorhees anytime soon?
You know, that's one of he will be receiving an email from me probably tomorrow. Just, again, it's kind of short notice, but simply to let him know that I will be back there for the Action Martial Arts Hall of Fame. I will be in the area, so if you want to do something, just when I'm in an area doing things, I mean, to travel it, and simply just do a seminar, if it's a standalone product, I charge one price, but if I'm back there doing other things, then that's when they get the old Kmart Blue Light specials. And everybody likes a deal, so a lot of them tend to jump on that. So there's a strong possibility I may be over there at Ken's school. He does a great job.
Yeah, that's actually where I got to meet you. That was a very enlightening seminar you gave that day, and I certainly recommend anybody get out there and see it.
Do you remember anything particular about it that you liked the most, if you had to pick up like one item? Because I know I teach a number of different things, and no two seminars are ever the same. I start off the same, but I welcome questions. As soon as the first question arises, that's how every seminar starts to deviate from right then and there.
One thing that I took away from that was how candid you were about your relationship with Dana White, because somebody obviously had to ask this question, what's your relationship with Dana White? But just how candid you were, that's what I took away from it. I don't practice martial arts, so I was there as a guest of one of the students, and so I was just taking it all in, and it was, for me, a very enlightening experience.
Well, even though I have me on the phone, I mean, you guys obviously realize I'm still rather candid. I mean, I always tell people that you may or may not like what I have to say, but is it the truth? Oh, yeah. Sometimes some people don't like to have their noses rubbed into the truth, though.
Oh, I can certainly agree with that sentiment. But, Dan, you're always a wonderful guest. I can't wait. You know what? Once that book gets a little bit more in action, I would love to have you back, and we can discuss, the first of three books, apparently, that are going to come out.
I believe it should be out by 2015. I'm realistic. That's why I look at it. So there's easy. It could be the first one, but the first one would probably touch base into amateur wrestling, professional wrestling, a little bit of the mixed martial arts world, and then some of the other crazy, wacky things I've kind of encountered in some of my travels, just to make it as popular amongst a lot of different people. And then, the following books will be just more of the same untold stories from not having enough room in the first book.
Definitely, definitely. But Dan, you know what? Maybe before then, I'd like to get you back on. We're friends with a MMA referee, and once a quarter, we talk about different things that are going on in MMA, and you're more than welcome to come back for one of those. It's kind of a round table. So if you're interested in that, I'll shoot you an email when that comes up. If not, I understand.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like I said, it's just up to you guys. Like I said, I will never be the word that my kids learn real quick as they're growing up is never say the word bored around dad. Because when they say bored, I'm like, really? And they're like, they look at me, no, dad, no. Because I get that crazy look in my eyes. Let's go do something here then. And they learn never to say the word I'm bored around dad anymore. And that literally is why I say that I don't think I will ever be bored in life. I have, I think I'll have to live two or three more lives just to get the current list of to-dos done.
All right. One last thing that I did want to touch base on. The one thing that I did take away, and I just recalled it, was Match Promise. You were coming back from a overseas trip. I believe you were coming back from Japan, and you wrote a poem.
Yep.
Do you care to? You don't have to recite the poem, but just the story of the Match Promise that people can actually pick up. You have a deal right now on DanTavern.com.
Yeah, I was going to say, some people might prompt to look at that. I know it's hard to believe that someone with the ring name The Beast writes poetry, and it's not quite as poetic as roses are red, violets are blue. Yes, I'm going to pummel you all through and through. It's not quite as poetic as that, but I wrote this poem literally over 20 years ago now, and it pertains to the sport of amateur wrestling, and literally that poem hangs up in a lot of amateur wrestling rooms and in a lot of individual amateur wrestlers in their bedrooms, stuff like this, as their words of inspiration. But I look at it's not just for the sport of amateur wrestling, but as you look at it, it shows you good personality and character type of traits that you should have and to pursue things. And, just to me, it's just a very optimistic, positive type of influence, and to know that you can achieve things if you work hard enough.
Amen. I think that's a message that anybody can pick up on. But, of course, everyone check out DanSeverin.com for more information on Dan Severin. And, Dan, like I said, I'll shoot you an email next time we do that MMA roundtable, because I think having your experience along with a referee's experience, just thinking about it, it's an amazing thing. But thank you so much again for your time, sir.
Nope. I appreciate you guys having me on, and we'll until next time.
Definitely. Thank you so much, and you have a great night.
Thanks, sir.
Yep. All right, guys.
That was, of course, Dan the Beast Severin. And I'll tell you what, each time I always feel like I came out of a 30-minute battle in Detroit.
I feel like I got an education.
Well, you know, it really is, and I think we really went through all the emotions with that interview. We certainly touched on a few things I don't think you wanted to touch on early on, but
yeah,
we did get there. And but right now what I'm going to do is play the Mystery Men, and we'll be back right after this. Keep my heat on. Why not? Why don't we?
Do it. Was the Mystery Men with Keep My Heat On. And I think for this next week, we need something to really cover this breaking news, really. Of course, go to lucha-rock.com. Download the album. I'm so flabbergasted. Dan, take it away. You were watching this announcement for WWE. Calm down. Watching.
Let's get it out. Let me get it out, Dan.
I'm going to punch you, Dean.
You were watching. What? Dan, let me get it out.
I'm excited.
It's called an intro.
I'm excited.
Now, apparently, this WWE network has been announced. It's in Las Vegas. It's live. Dan, take it away.
I'm excited. I'm sorry. So I'm going to hold the pricing and basic information for the end, but they're talking about a a scheduled network. The WWE Network was the groundbreaking announcement, by the way. Funny segments with DX and Stephanie McMahon and Stone Cold had a good speech about the Attitude Era. There's a couple things. There's going to be a scheduled network that's streaming 24/7. So, you know, just like a real – I can't say real. That's terrible. Just like an actual television cable network, there's going to be scheduled times for shows. Will be included will be Next Superstars. Shows that aren't on TV right now will be officially airing exclusively on the network. They're going to run the Legends House. That is all in the can, apparently, you know, almost, what was it, 2 years ago they announced the launch, right?
It was a while ago.
Dean, was it 11 or 12?
What?
The year that they announced the network. I think it was 2011.
I believe it was 11.
It's been a while.
A long time.
Really a moot point, but go ahead.
But the Legends House is in the can. It's sort of a real-world slash competition-style show with Legends, Pat Patterson, Mean Gene, Jimmy Hart, Roddy Piper. They're going to do a show called WWE WrestleMania Rewind, which is a documentary-style series about matches in WrestleMania, lost footage, behind-the-scenes stuff, interviews, all kind of things. That looks interesting to me. Because there was that DVD that came out, I don't know if you got it, Dean, the story of WrestleMania, and there's a lot of stuff on that, especially the Blu-ray, but that only scratched the surface as far as stories and stuff.
Is on-demand, it looks like, 1,500 hours of on-demand.
Yeah. But there's a lot of stuff. I'm talking about, like, documentaries and interviews that they only scratch the surface on that they can on a Blu-ray. I think there's an advantage to streaming a service than just setting the content and letting it run for a month and then taking it down. You know what I mean? I think. That's just my opinion. They're going to do the Monday Night War. They're going to continue with that, airing Nitros and Raws. That week of. This is a new show. I think it was announced before, but I don't remember. WWE Countdown. I think they do a version of this on the website now. But basically, it's like a polling device. You know, number one catchphrases, top 10 catchphrases, top 10 wrestlers, top 10.
Well, they
10
do
moments.
That on YouTube, too.
It's going to be interactive online with fans watching live, being able to vote and comment live. Now, the big thing about this that I found very interesting, and I still can't believe I'm seeing this, but it's been verified twice on the announcement and online, that not only is it $9.95 a month.
With a six-month commitment.
With a six-month commitment. You must want it really, really badly. The pay-per-views will air live for no extra charge.
Boom.
Boom.
I believe WWE Take My Money.
Yes,
is what's
shut
in
up.
Order here.
Shut up. Take My Money.
Yes.
Basically, I'm gonna become a shut-in, and this is what I'm going to do for my life right now.
I think it's, you know what, off the heels of Fight Pass, maybe this is why Fight Pass came out so soon. So UFC fans would go, hey, we got Fight Pass. And then WWE said, bah-ha! Fight Pass.
I will say this. The network launches on February 24th at 9 o'clock in the morning.
No, you're wrong. The first show will be the 23rd with that's when everything goes live, but the 23rd they're going to have an after show for Raw.
Oh, so we don't get the
Rumble. Everybody else is saying the 24th.
It's going to go live.
Okay, so it's not live now, is what I'm hearing.
Live programming on WWE Network will begin on Monday the 24th. We're just the semantics here.
Okay. Oh, okay.
At 11:06 p.m.
I'm sorry.
With
sorry.
A live post show immediately following Monday.
All right. That wasn't your fault. I got confused with what you said. That was my fault.
And then video on demand programming will be available immediately following at 9 a.m.
I'm really – it's the pay-per-view thing. Is what just got me.
That's huge.
That is what
enormous.
we've been talking since the show was the inception of this show and the other show we did about how ridiculously overpriced, quite honestly, the pay-per-views were. So now you have a choice. If you don't want to watch all that content, you can still pay premium to watch the pay-per-view. Or if you're a huge wrestling fan, you're a step ahead of the game. By paying $9.95 a month, you are ahead of the game.
You know what? I think it's time to cancel my cable and just have UFC Fight Pass. And what the hell else can I watch?
Well, as I was watching the announcement, sir, I was thinking, oh, this is all on TV. What, you know, I'm not going to be able to see any of it. And then the digital media guy came out and was like, this is all online, streaming 24/7. Do it on your phone, Xbox 360, place. I was like, yes! I'm so glad I got rid of cable.
Well, Kindle Fire.
Yeah, oh, I have it, you know.
Anywhere you have an app. If you can connect to the internet, it sounds like you're going to be able to get this thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, the announcement's still going on, so I'm waiting for Hulk Hogan to pop up. So I really have a feeling he's the end of this announcement. I could be wrong. But once I saw that pay-per-view thing, like I was looking at the Monday Night War thing, and that's one of the main reasons I like to watch it. The WWE Countdown and the Legends House really intrigued me. But as soon as they said the streaming service and the pay-per-views were included, my head exploded.
Well, there you go, Dan. Pick up your head because, Omega, we got to move right along.
No!
We got to talk about Fight Pass.
Yes.
On a night that saw so many illegal elbows, even I went cross-eyed. It was UFC Fight Night 34 at the Marina Bay Sands in Marina Bay, Singapore. The first international offering available on the new UFC Fight Pass that just, frankly, at this point, doesn't seem as such
quite as shiny now, is it?
No, it's not, darn it. But anyway, they did put on an event in Singapore with, Bruce Buffer wasn't there, but we did have Joe Gonzalez, and we did have the B-team.
Martinez.
Whoever.
Joe Martinez.
And we did have the B-team of Anik and Stahl. So we had that. I actually don't mind that team. But, you know, UFC, it's Goldberg and Rogan. It's kind of like the Monsoon and Heenan of the UFC, but be that as it may, they did have an event. Now, what do you take away from this? Of course, I made during the introduction to this segment, the illegal strikes.
There was a lot of sloppy fighting on this card. I don't know why, though. I mean, the rules are not drastically different in places.
Well, Japan had different rules, but I mean, the 12-6 elbow is a pretty easy rule to remember.
Well, anyone,
it's a dumb rule, but still.
It's stupid, but yeah, it's because it's a stupid rule. Everybody remembers it. I don't understand why so many guys were going for the 12-6 elbows. I mean, but whatever. It is what it is. It just was kind of a sloppy card, I thought.
What do you take away from it? Now, if this is what we're going to, and it seems this is what we're going to see for the international cards, we're going to see a lot of local talent, if you will. We're going to see a lot of, now, they tout it as you're going to see top 10 ranked fighters, and now Saffredine is a top 10, I guess, a former Strikeforce welterweight champion.
Yeah.
When Strikeforce didn't mean anything. But what'd you take away from it? The main event was passable once it got to the fifth round, I think.
Yeah, I mean Tarek Saffredine, you know, the last Strikeforce welterweight champion, had to put on a strong performance to overcome Lim, who was pretty game.
I don't think it was a great fight for either guy, though. I think the guys got tired at the end. I think Saffedine was overly cautious. I think Lim was just got chopped down by Saffedine's leg kicks, and he was
he was just kind of
out on his feet, and I think he just went numb in the fifth round.
And just
said, screw it, I'm going for it.
The closest I've seen to that, as far as the leg kicks, was Forrest Griffin chopping down Rampage Jackson.
Well, there's been some other ones that have been worse than that, even in recent years. Guys are really starting to get the leg kick game now.
It was the mystique, and it was really one of the first times, especially in a championship fight, Forrest Griffin doing leg kicks that effectively. That's why, you know, that one always stands out.
Yeah. Jose Aldo did the favor, too.
So. Did he ever?
Yeah. So, I mean, this was another example of you know, why Joe Rogan's so enamored with leg kicks, because they are effective if you do them right. If you can generate the kind of power you need, you can really
– And they don't get checked.
Yeah, they don't get checked. You can win a fight with them. And the fight itself was somewhat underwhelming for Saffedine. I think Saffedine really needed to come out and prove that being the Strikeforce welterweight champion meant something. And he really didn't do that, I don't think. Granted, he had been out for over a year, so there was probably some ring rust there. But he was very deliberate. He was very technical. I didn't like that neither guy was showing a lot of head movement. So when I think, you know, as either of these guys fought heavier talent, they're going to get struck by some of the better strikers, and are just going to get destroyed if they don't start figuring out how to move back and forth and avoid punches.
Anything you take away from that? I mean, what's next for either guy? I mean, is Lim a prospect? Or?
I don't think Lim's a prospect. I think Lim's interesting because he has some height. He reminded me of a welterweight Stefan Struve in a lot of ways. Tall, got a lot of reach, doesn't use it. You know, he's not really in the conversation for anyone here. He's a journeyman. He's a local talent. We talked about the international. You said about the international fight cards need local talent. I think that's why he was in there. Saffedine is going to get a bigger challenge in this next fight off this win. He didn't look stupendous doing it, certainly don't say title shot anytime soon. Even if welterweight had a decent, if welterweight wasn't wide open now with George St. Pierre retiring, he's going to have hiatus, whatever you want to call it.
It's a big word. And
Okay, he's not fighting. He's vacated his title. Saffedine is going to get someone maybe like, Jake Shields.
I could see that.
I could see him getting a Jake Shields. He Matt Brown is the next guy above him in the rankings, but I want to see Matt Brown fight someone like Jake Ellenberger or Rory McDonald before I see him fight Tarek Saffedine. So,
well, what about Kawajiri and Soriano? That, of course, ended 50 seconds into the second round with a rear naked choke.
Yeah, Kawajiri is a prospect coming out of Japan. He's one of these guys that's highly touted. Looked real good. Pretty much dominated Soriano on his way to getting that rear naked choke submission. Not much to be said other than he looked really good doing it, and I think he really made his statement that he belonged in the UFC. Now let's see him take on someone of UFC caliber, someone back in the States. Not necessarily, you know, someone with a little bit more name value, and we'll see where he goes from there.
Three elbows to the back of the head, and then ended the next one, and that was Kunimoto defeating Dutra with the DQ, the elusive DQ, the shoot DQ in UFC.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful thing to see. You don't see it too often, but it was really, they said three on commentary, but it was more or less five elbow strikes. Dutra was getting clinched against the cage.
Yeah, I don't know what he was saying. How you thought that wasn't an elbow to the back of the head? I don't know. See, I'm not even sure if it was a 12-6 elbow or was it an elbow to the back of the head.
At that point, it really doesn't. It's elementary at that point because he couldn't continue.
Yeah.
And they asked him like three times. They're like, can you continue? The guy's laid out on the mat.
Yeah.
He can't feel his feet. Can you continue? No, no. Ask him one more time.
Yeah, just, we want to make sure that you're really hurt.
Gentlemen.
Jeez.
You said shoot DQ.
Well, because that's a joke in wrestling.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought
some people will throw like here.
Yeah.
I'll give it to you in terms that you can understand. The shoot DQ should have happened in the Gacy Ivan match.
Yeah, I got you. I'm fine.
Ivan smashed Gacy directly in the view of Spanky 1, 2, 3, and he allowed the match to continue. But that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, let that one go.
What else do you take away? Because Holloway, I thought, was very impressive taking on Chope.
Holloway looked really good. Really, really, really good.
I like this kid now.
Yeah, he had his ups and downs, I think, but he's really got some crisp striking, some really good speed. He just ran up against, you know, two really good guys in Dennis Bermudez and Conor McGregor. This victory puts him back on the positive trail. He's young. He's 22.
Yeah.
I mean, he's
got plenty of time.
Yes. I mean, he just wasn't ready for Conor McGregor, Dennis Bermudez. He's working on it there. He looked really crisp. He definitely had the better striking, the better technique on Chope. Some of those spinning kicks were beautiful. You know, I think he's definitely on the right track going forward. I mean,
someone to look at.
Yeah, definitely someone to, you know, again, he's 22. He's got plenty of time. Let's see what happens when he gets up there.
Anything else you want to talk about here?
No, not really. I mean, like I said, it's hard to get too worked up for these international cards. I mean, because despite you know, to talk about they're having top talent, you know, if the guys are really top talent, they would probably be in the UFC already. You know,
but they're top 10 talent. You don't understand.
Yeah, I mean,
we got a Gustafsson fight. Come on,
Gustafsson is absolutely a top 10 talent. But what's the rest of the card? You know.
Well, what's next? Of course, next Wednesday we're going to see Rockhold and Philippou, but that's on Fox Sports 1. So never mind. Right, that's Fox Sports 1.
Yeah, I think so. That was
that's in Georgia, so that's Fox Sports 1.
Yeah, I think the next one is the Gustafsson one, right? In March?
No, Machida. Machida and Musasi, I believe. Or is that going to be on Fox? I don't know what's on what, but
yeah, I'm not sure.
Actually, if that is on Fight Pass, that would probably be worth it because you get Machida, Musasi, and Souza taking on Carmut. So
yeah, those are big fights.
It's in Brazil, so I'm not sure. That's why I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but I want to, like, you know, because Brazil is on roughly the same time zone as we are, they might put it on Fox Sports. I don't know.
I know there's another.
I think it might just be European and Asian fight cards that are on Fight Pass.
Let me just see, because I know they have the schedule on UFC TV. Go ahead and talk about your overall thoughts. So, well, actually, talk about UFC 168. We didn't have.
Because we were off, we didn't even
talk about it.
We didn't talk about some of the earth-shattering stuff to come out of that. I'm going to start from the bottom, so we can talk about the main events.
Oh, definitely. Go.
When you come back, overall, it was a very good card. I thought. I thought Dennis Seaver looked okay in his unanimous decision victory over Manny Gambierian.
Not a fan.
I know you're not
a
fan.
We know
that. He didn't put on his best performance either. I talked about Michael Johnson before the holidays and saying I didn't think he was real. I think he's for real now. I don't know what his ceiling is, but he did look very good in defeating Gleison Tibau by KO. Looked just more like the martial artist he was supposed to be. And really, you know, he dominated that fight. It was interesting. You know, I expected him to kind of crumble under the Gleison Tibau's strength, and that didn't really happen. You know, the Chris Lieben Uriah Hall fight was saddening, I think, would be the appropriate term. Chris Lieben taking a drubbing into a to basically quitting at the end of round one. He had nothing for Uriah Hall.
Oh, that was kind of sad to see Lieben go. He was out. That fight should have been stopped.
Yes. I mentioned this before. I said, I don't think I want to see Chris Lieben fighting anymore. And I definitely don't want to see him now. I hope it sounds like this is it for him. I hope it is, because as much as I like Lieben, I think he's entertaining. No, I don't need to see him get beat up.
The sad thing about Lieben, though, is there's not a broadcasting career waiting for him. He's not as well-spoken as Sonnen or Stahn or Rashad Evans or Cormier, for that matter.
Yeah.
He's just going to open a gym somewhere, which is fine, and, you know, it's a moneymaker, I suppose, but it's not like he has a lucrative contract waiting for him.
Yeah, I think he can teach, though. I think he's taught before, so I hope he can turn that into
something.
A teaching career. We hope. Not everybody can be a broadcaster. Let's face it.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Dustin Poirier looked real good against Diego Brandão.
Wasn't there some controversy where Brandão wanted to stab him in the neck? Didn't that come out during the post-fight presser? He's like, hey, have a good fight. Like, Poirier went up to him. He's like, hey, have a good fight. And
Brandão didn't make weight.
Yeah.
So that was – Poirier was not happy about that. Poirier was very vocal about Brandão not being a professional. And after the fight, I just kind of tuned out, to be honest.
Yeah.
But, you know, Poirier was very vocal after the fight about Brandão's lack of professionalism in making weight. So, I don't know. I would think the extra money in my pocket would be.
I think that would cancel out. Look at that. Look at Benoit. He made $100,000 that night.
Yeah, exactly. You know, moving on to Jim Miller. Wow, did he look good?
That arm bar was spectacular.
It was pretty, very pretty.
The only one we saw though that night.
No, but that was really pretty. Miller continues to be that guy who just continues to look good. I mean, there's nothing really else to say about him. He, you know, every time he falls back, he comes back with something and looks good doing it, and you start to wonder again. You start to feel it with him, and you think, well, maybe he could be a contender, and then he ends up running up against somebody like Pat Healy and losing, even though that was a no decision. But, you know, he's had that up-and-down career in the last six fights, lost to Benson Henderson, wins versus Melvin Gallar, loses to Nate Diaz. Pat Healy gets up to that upper echelon and can't break through. But he's still a good fighter, and he's entertaining it every time he's out. So,
you know who else is entertaining?
Travis Brown?
Yeah. That's a segue, my friend. Now, Travis Brown defeating Josh Barnett. If you blinked, it was over. Brown, do you think he's a contender, baby?
I think you got to say he's a contender at this point.
He's going up against Radum. That's an eliminator, my friend.
That's an eliminator. I mean, you got to think he's a contender. I mean, well, we keep talking about the thinness of heavyweight. You know, he's just beaten Josh Barnett. He's moved up to number three in the rankings. You know, and the guys ahead of him are the only guy ahead of him that's not named Fabricio Werdum is Junior Dos Santos.
Wow.
So he's right there. There's no reason. These are the two guys you would pick next for Cain Velasquez.
Yeah.
So if Cain's going to be out for a while, make these guys fight and figure out who's the better.
Now, the one thing, he does have more size than JDS, so this might actually be a more difficult test for Cain at this point.
It's hard to say because
Werdum, I'm not interested in. The only fight that Werdum ever even remotely impressed me was against Roy. Come on.
Roy Nelson?
Big Rig, yeah. Where he kept on smashing him.
Oh, you're talking, yeah, it was Roy Nelson.
Nelson.
Big Country.
Big Country. Big Rig, Big Country.
Big Rig, I was like, that's Johnny Hendricks. Like, yeah.
Well, when he beat up Johnny Hendricks in the locker room.
Well,
but anyway.
He beat Big Nog.
Yeah, I know. He has notable wins, but he just has an impression. I'd rather see Travis Brown. I think that's a more interesting fight.
Travis Brown is the future. If Travis Brown is successful, he is the future. Werdum is an older fighter, and this is probably his last shot. You know, so
yeah,
I don't know. That's kind of my thought on it. I mean, it was kind of like it was Josh Barnett's last shot, and Travis Brown just totally just made that go away. So,
well, co-main event, my friend. Rousey Tate 2 had a different ending. Well, it ended in a different round, I should say.
It ended in a different round. It
the
went
same
it
ending.
Went,
but
yeah.
I think we can take away something very important here. A few things.
Okay.
One is someone with good stand-up will give Rousey some serious trouble.
Mm-hmm.
That's number one. Number two is the superior judo skills of Rousey are very hard to defend against, because the judo that she was – there were 16 different throws and flips and clinches, and one website broke down all the different techniques she used.
Everyone executed to perfection.
Yeah. And there was really no defense from Tate. Now, if you get somebody in there like a McMahon who can neutralize that with Olympic wrestling, right? McMahon's Olympic wrestling.
Yep.
Maybe we have a fight. What are McMahon's stand-up skills like, though? Because I think that's really the key to defeating Rousey. Rousey really doesn't have good stand-up defense.
My understanding is that Sarah McMahon doesn't either.
Oh.
She's coming from that wrestling background. She's going to come in with similar strengths to Rousey.
Okay.
Now, the thing would be, does Olympic caliber wrestling nullify Olympic caliber judo? And that's a big question.
Judo is such a discipline where you're using the own person's momentum, and the way she does it is a sight to behold.
Right. Well, you know, Misha Tate was not using great takedown skills.
No.
To try to take Rousey down. Rousey just took advantage of it. The question becomes, does Sarah McMahon, with that level of wrestling, is she going to make the same mistakes? And is she going to be able to take Rousey down? And then, if she can, then that's the question, because then is Rousey off her back? And that doesn't – I mean, Rousey can operate off her back. She's shown that before. But with a smothering wrestler on her and she can't get her ground game going – then what does she have left? Does she have the takedown defense? Does she have the ability to get up from her back and then move to top position if she's coming up against someone who can push her up against the cage and is not going to get thrown so easily? It's an interesting question. I don't like that Sarah McMahon is getting this shot right now, because I think in 3 or more fights she'd be much better.
Yeah.
Better off to it, but you know, it is where we are.
She wanted to fight Rousey.
You know,
that is,
Rousey wanted to fight, and that's fine. And you know, if UFC calls you and says you get a title shot, you take it, absolutely. But I think it would have been better off if McMahon had a couple more fights. Now we could be sitting here at the end of February, and Sarah McMahon's the new champion. I don't know, but...
Who knows, because 2013 was such a strange year, and it ended on a weird note. We'll get to that in a second.
Yep.
Put a whole damper on everything, but I want to make another point with Tate and her striking. If she had more power, Rousey definitely would have been in more trouble. So my question to you at this point is, someone like Holly Holm, who I think is still untested, so I'm not considering it now, but someone like Holly Holm, perhaps Cyborg, do you think this is someone that could end the Rousey mystique?
It's possible, if they're able to keep Rousey at bay. And I think someone like Holly Holm with that striking background is going to know how to use a jab and keep Rousey out on the outside. So, yeah, from that respect, I think it's possible that someone with a good striking background could give Rousey fits and possibly get an out point, but they're going to have to be able to take – they're going to have to stay off the cage and avoid the clinch to avoid judo, and they're going to have to not be trying to get score takedowns.
Yeah.
So I think
Cyborg would be very overwhelming. Never going to happen.
Cyborg would be a different fight, because Cyborg comes in rushing and
murders you
and might be able – and her striking is
She's just a beast. She's strong.
She's Vanderlei Silva when Vanderlei Silva mattered.
Right. She doesn't have, like, highly technical striking, in my opinion.
No.
But she's just overwhelming.
Oh, yeah.
And that strategy could work, but I think you have to have the size of Cyborg to do it.
I think that's what Tate was attempting to do early on in that fight. Just take the fight to her, but Rousey had it scouted. And then Tate wound up fighting Rousey's fight. Now, unfortunately, the next fight, Silva broke his leg. So that was our UFC report. Now, let's, you know what? I think this fight, there's a lot of people that aren't giving Weidman, again, his just desserts. Now, the first fight, of course, ended when Silva was clowning around in the second, and Weidman caught him. Call it lucky, call it a fluke, call it whatever. He knocked him out. Followed it up, you know, got a shot, followed it up, pounded him out on the ground. Now this one, people are saying, oh, he checked a leg kick. Now if you go back to that first fight, you will see Anderson Silva scoring some leg kicks. Ray Longo, who is Weidman's coach, told him and trained him, and Derek McDonald, who is part of In the Room, actually trains at Weidman's, not Weidman's gym. Weidman will have a gym, but right now he trains with Matt Serra at Matt Serra's gym in Long Island. Derek told me that that is one thing that they teach all their students, to check the leg kick. So what you have here is Weidman checking a leg kick beautifully, which caused the injury and which caused, I would call it a referee, you know, an injury stoppage, but they're calling it a TKO, whatever. That's all semantics. But it's what caused that nasty break.
Mm-hmm.
Period. If it's a defensive-offensive maneuver, which is what it basically boils down to, he did what he had to do. And the first round, he dominated. He had Silva out, eyes rolled back in his head, good night. He woke him back up with some punches.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Undoubtedly. He dominated this fight.
Chris Weidman has not lost a round to Anderson Silva.
Period.
End of sentence. He has not lost a round. You can say he's not a, I still don't think he's got the same skills that Anderson Silva did.
No.
Does.
No.
But he's won every round. I mean, he has done what he needs to do to win MMA fights, and he's got Silva's number. One
he
way or another.
He is the only one. The only one. And how many fights in UFC? 16?
Something like that.
In 16 fights that when Silva started clowning around, he didn't get excited. He didn't get jumpy. He continued pressing forward. He threw a strike, knocked him out. Period. Weidman is your champion.
18
Weidman,
fights.
Yes. Weidman is your undisputed champion.
No, there is no question. To your point about the leg kicks, that is a technique. That is something you do. That is a maneuver you train on to use against a leg kick. And if it happens to win you the fight, more power to you, you're the champion.
Amen.
I mean, that's what it is. I mean, this one doesn't play into Silva. This isn't a mistake. This isn't a fluke. The injury might be considered a fluke, but the technique is not. The skill to check a kick and do that so that a guy's leg could possibly break is not a fluke. It's not common, I don't think.
No.
But it can happen, and that's why you check leg kicks.
He checked it beautifully, broke the leg horribly.
Horribly, yes.
Disgustingly. And he is your champion. Now, it was a tibia-fibia break. Anderson Silva is now back home recovering, and he wants GSP. But that's neither here nor there. Now, one thing I do want to mention before we wrap this up, Omega, is Dominic Cruz finally vacating the title. Barrow is your champion now, and he's taking on Faber.
I like it. I like it a lot.
What is that, UFC 169, correct?
That's in 3 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah, Uriah Faber. The only thing I hate about this is Uriah Faber is getting this shot on 3 weeks' notice. That sucks. You know,
But he is a fighter that is always ready. This is his fifth fight in 11 months.
He's just a beast. I mean, he's just a machine. And
the uncrowned fighter of the year,
yeah.
as we were saying.
Yeah. Look. I mean, I you know, Bill Bookwalter gave me a little bit of grief for calling him old. Okay, fine. But he is a veteran fighter. He's got a lot of fights behind him. And he's fought five fights in 11 months. He's going to fight five fights in 11 months. That is crazy. More power to him. He is the guy. I mean, I've talked about it over the last couple of fights of his. It's getting hard to deny him a title shot. And if he's available and Hendon Brown needs an opponent to defend his title, go for it. I like it.
Oh, well, Mir against Overeem is also on that card. That's a stat card, yeah, 169.
Yeah, that should be a good one.
Looking forward to that. So, a lot going on.
A busy 14 coming up.
Yeah, well, what, 50 fights? Something like that?
Something like that.
Yeah, 50 different events. So,
50 events or something like that. That's what they say. It's crazy. So,
let's talk a little bit about Old School Raw. Dan.
Yes, sir.
Old School Raw. What segment stood out the most to you?
I had to go back and watch Hulu for the first hour because I missed it due to Obey the Puck. But I will say this. The Pit segment was really awesome.
Yes.
Of
course, you're talking about Roddy
Piper.
Paint the picture.
I was getting there. Between Roddy Piper. First of all, it was Roddy Piper's guest was the Shield. And the back and forth between him and all three of them, really, but Moxley and him, I'm sorry, what's his, Ambrose, and him was a good moment. That was my favorite moment. My second favorite moment, and I don't care, I marked out for it, was Jake. Ugh. Oh, shut up. It was... Even if it's only one time, you know. Dean, when that music hit, I forgot whose music that was.
I did too. I was like, who is that?
Yeah,
I don't know who that is.
Who the hell is this?
Really?
Yeah, I forgot. It's been so long since I've heard his music, and
I knew he would be there because he doesn't really go anywhere that DDP's not.
That's very true. Yeah,
and,
you got to stick with him, yeah.
And when it hit, I was, okay.
Well, when DDP came out and that came and went, I was like, I even said to Kelly, I was like, I'm very surprised Hall or Jake wasn't there, at least, you know, as...
they leave Hall to his own devices much more than they should.
I was about to say that after the thought, like, why is he not with? Why is he not with them? At least Jake's like, I'm coming with you, Paige.
Maybe he's home playing WWE 14. There's
I can't
video of that.
I can't leave. You can't leave me here.
Omega, your moments.
I thought that I kind of liked the Wyatts and Bryan match. I like the setup of that. I like this. I like him coming out. That visual was interesting. I also liked the Piper's Pit segment. I thought that was well done. I really liked Ambrose. I really liked Reigns with that one line threatening of Piper. I thought that was very good.
I did.
And I thought the match between CM Punk and Reigns was very well done as well. I thought the ending was solid.
On your toes.
I am nothing if not cynical.
Why?
So my
but I like Jake too, but Jake was the top. So
I would like to point out Too Cool is they're WWE legends.
That was fun though.
Really?
But my point to
Too Cool.
I'm sorry, let me rephrase that. The point that Kelly made was 90% of the people in that audience have no idea who the hell they were.
Too cool.
Too cool, yeah.
Well, when they came out, I said, they're legends? I don't...
Okay.
I mean, okay.
Well,
Scotty Too Hotty, baby.
Gilbert, that means Gilbert's a legend.
Yes. Yeah. Goldberg is a legend, undoubtedly.
Yeah. If you're on good terms with WWE and you worked for them at some point in time,
you're a legend.
You're a legend.
Actually, I think my favorite moment would have been Big E Langston running into random individuals in the back, because that's really what a...
Oh, the Million Dollar Man was awesome. The Million Dollar Man was awesome.
That's really what it, you know, Volkov will be singing the Russian national anthem. And, you know, that's how things are in
when
the locker rooms.
When is Ted DiBiase not awesome?
Exactly.
That's just my feeling. And my final thought about the Jake thing was, is so you say what you want. It was cool, after all he was through, to see him in the ring one more time, that he's been able to stay sober after all the crap he's done. It was nice.
Yeah, it was nice. It was nice to see him walk out of a WWE backstage looking healthy, able to walk down to the ring, looking relatively lucid.
Hey, Dean, did you get nervous when you picked the snake up? Keep your PG, Jake.
Yes, I was going to make mention of that. Did you happen to hear what CM Punk extolling to?
Keep your PG, Jake.
It's PG now, Jake.
Right
as he puts, I guess that was Lucifer. They said Damien, but it was Lucifer. Right on Moxley's balls. It's PG now, Jake.
Chris may not know is attached to that clip you played earlier is what he did in the ring that day was basically take the snake out and, how do I say this lightly?
He simulated
self-stimulation.
That's probably the best way to put it. But yes, they had to change the match. Of course, that's that legendary Legends of Wrestling, probably the worst pay-per-view of all time.
Oh, man.
The only thing really to take away from that is Tully Blanchard, Stan Lane. Everything else is a complete hogwash of... One night, Dan, you know, you keep on saying, when are we going to do that thing?
I
think that would be the thing to do. Pick one of those matches.
Yeah.
And go from there.
I agree with you 100%, actually.
Because that is, by God, one of the worst pay-per-views I've ever witnessed.
Let's do it this week, whenever you want.
Well, I'd have to find the video and download and all that stuff. But anyway, that's off the air talk. Moving right along is On Point Wrestling, of course, returned. Great show. Neither of you can comment because neither of you were there.
Yes.
However, Matt Tremont did defeat Eddie Kingston in the main event.
How did that look?
It was a fantastic match.
Cool.
The DVD of this should be available within a month. Of course, Pancoast Productions was behind it, the former distributor of the CZW videos. They, wonderful job.
Michael Pancoast great.
Michael Pancoast is an amazing videographer, an amazing, and just great to work with, quite frankly. So looking forward to getting that product. And, of course, Drew Blood defeating Pinky Sanchez in what became the first round tournament match to crown a new, well, the inaugural.
First, yeah.
The inaugural on-point champion. That's big news. That was shocking.
I would like to say to a guy who has become, well, our friend, past the shows, get well soon to Xavier, who injured himself pretty bad on that show.
Didn't even know.
Oh, yeah. Xavier Cross hurt his knee pretty bad, and he's been on crutches. He was on crutches at the beginning of the week. I'm not sure how he is now, but it's pretty bad.
I don't think it happened there because he was walking around fine.
I'll talk to you off air.
Just saying.
Talk to you off air.
Walking around fine.
Just saying.
Whatever. Walking around fine. Be that as it may. Walking around fine. Be that as it may, a wonderful show. The return date is March 15th. Put that on your calendars. March 15th. And, of course, CZW returns this weekend. The main event apparently is Drew Gulak, Dan, against Lucky 13, the sole survivor of Cage of Death.
I think Drew's in trouble, quite frankly. I think Lucky 13 is going to take this ride right into a victory.
Perhaps is he lucky to get this victory? We'll find out, Dan.
Maybe he's skillful enough.
You know what's odd, Dan?
What's odd, Dean?
Nobody on the losing team of Cage of Death is on the show.
Strikes me as odd. Oh.
Strikes me as very odd.
I'm going to leave that one alone.
But the return of Masada on a happy note.
Hell yeah.
As he takes on Alexander James.
Don't know how he does it, so this will be interesting to watch.
Yeah, yeah. The Dirty Daddy also coming back to action. And I do want to say he took on Biff Busick at On Point Wrestling. We're going to see the rematch at CZW answering the challenge coming up this Saturday.
This Saturday.
Live on iPay-Per-View, Dan.
$14.95.
Is it $14.95? They jacked up the price after Cage of Death.
I bought Cage of Death for $14.95.
Previous to Cage of Death, it was $9.99. So after Cage of Death, I'm not buying it. Ridiculous. $15.
Maybe Cage of Death was just $14.95.
We'll find out, Dan.
I'm going to find out. Right.
Find
now.
Out. You do the digging, do the investigative reporting.
I'm going to Google. Oh, great. Everything froze. Hold on. I got it.
Okay.
I'm going to dig in.
He's digging. Omega. I need filler. What's your favorite color?
Green.
Is it really green?
Me too.
I had to pick for more of a, I don't know.
Back to $9.99.
Thank God. Because I was running out of things interesting to say about the color green.
Green, the color of...
I thought it was orange, though.
The color... No, that's my second favorite color.
Not orange. Not orange, Omega.
Oh, well, I mean, orange would probably be the best, probably, I guess. I don't think about it in terms of colors. I'm sorry.
Perhaps
I like my colors black, like my heart or something. I don't know. Whatever.
Yes.
Black heart.
You know what? I reposted that so people could listen back to some of the history of HIAC Talk Radio. And, of course, that is the Joel Goodhart interview from June of 2012 at this point. Fun interview with Joel Goodhart. Did you listen to it when I popped it up there, Dan?
I did not listen to it, no.
You weren't even on that night. You go back, it was Mark and myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've probably never heard that interview.
I've gone back and listened to every show on its original airing.
Oh, there you go.
I will listen to that as soon as I'm off the air.
You better.
I'm going to.
Darn you. What do we have coming up next week?
No idea.
It's the night of ultra-violent comedy, Dan.
Oh, no. Is that next week?
That
parental
is, course,
guidance suggested.
Ah!
Yes, yes. That is, of course,
oh no,
Chrissy Rivera and the Reverend Bob Levy. They will be here next week. And I don't know how I'm going to format it quite yet.
How do you format those two?
Well, I think you have one blend into the other, and then that one kind of...
You don't have them on at the same time.
No, they will be on at the same time at some point.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Dun-dun-dun-dun.
Definitely.
Will Bob be in the studio, as he discussed?
I don't know, Dan. I haven't gotten that far with him. I was dealing with Dan Severin this week. I do these things. If you must know, I'll start putting my feelers out on Sunday with Bob.
Oh.
And then we will finalize plans somewhere between Monday and Tuesday. That's how the magic works here.
You didn't have to do that. You could have just said no, and I would have accepted that.
Well, I'm just breaking it down. Maybe people wanted to know the time involved in producing a podcast such as this. It's not just thrown together.
No. There's actual planning, believe it or not.
It's not... Don't get me started. I've had a bad day, Dan.
I know you have. I was there for most of it.
Silently in the wings.
Just sitting there reading it, stewing. Just erasing many messages.
Be that as it may.
Cursing in my
apartment. Talk amongst yourselves for a second. I want to finish up an email. And
cursing in my apartment.
Omega Dan, okay, I'll give you a topic. Roddy Rowdy Piper should come back for a WrestleMania match involving Hulk Hogan.
Oh, really?
Discuss amongst yourselves.
Why?
Well, it's the 30th year anniversary of WrestleMania. Well, not really, but
first of all,
WrestleMania.
Why?
Yeah.
Right, discuss amongst yourselves.
This is okay. I will say this, not being in the 100% greatest shape, not even 50% greatest shape.
A tag match. Discuss.
Maybe a tag. No, I'm going to go on the original premise. If they were
I left that out.
Oh, okay. Tag match. You mean them and another person versus themselves and another person?
No. Opposite sides.
That's what I meant. Yeah, yeah.
Yes. So Hogan and someone against.
I believe that could work greatly because Hogan can't drop the leg anymore because of his back. As far as I am.
Keep him for WrestleMania, brother.
Yeah, if he wants to snap his back again. Piper, if it was in a tag match, I think it would work, Chris. Please, say something.
I don't want to see that. I just don't want to see it. I don't know what to do now. You know, if you want to put Piper you want to have Piper's pit on WrestleMania, I'm okay with that for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever. Yes. But no, I don't want to see them in the match. I don't see the need. Their personalities. Piper's always been more of a personality than at least in the last several decades. It's like more of a personality than a wrestler. We don't need to see it. And Hogan just needs to figure out that he shouldn't wrestle anymore. So
he stopped being able. He had that back surgery and he did that Hulkamania tour. And he wasn't able to do, you know, his whole thing at that point.
Right.
And this is already 3 or 4 or 5 years later. I really don't see him doing another match. I would think Stone Cold would wrestle again first before Hulk Hogan ever gets in the ring again.
Yes.
Okay. Let's continue down this hypothetical booking thing.
Let's book it, yeah.
Undertaker, who's his opponent? Are we eventually going to get to Undertaker and Brock like people have been saying?
Oh, man.
Do you think the Big Show feud, once it ends at Royal Rumble, he comes out the next night on Raw and says, look, I beat the Big Show, the biggest guy. I beat the world's strongest man. I beat the biggest guy on the roster. Who's left?
I think you booked it, brother. I agree with that 100%.
How about you,
Omega?
I just worry about Undertaker.
I do as well, especially with a bruiser like Brock.
Yeah, Brock is just Brock is not subtle.
Brock is not CM Punk.
Yeah, but do you think Undertaker is one of these guys that can take care of himself even at his age in the ring with Brock?
The thing with Brock, he doesn't mean to be. He's just a big guy that
he's
hits
just a
you.
Big dummy.
He's not a dummy.
No, I meant that silly.
Yeah, but he's just a big guy that hurts you. He doesn't mean to. I don't think, but he's just a big guy that there's force behind his moves.
I believe in my heart of hearts, I think Taker could take care of himself.
Maybe Taker 10 years ago, Dan, I'd agree with you. If we were talking WrestleMania 20.
This is a tough one, man.
I don't think it's a question of if it's a skill that, you know, Taker can take himself, but I just don't know if he's got.
Oh, you mean if he does the moves and he just does it too hard? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I just don't think that – I don't know that Taker can take it.
I don't know.
Even
he had a tough time last year, and that was CM Punk.
Yeah. That's where I'm at.
That's a rough one. That's a tough one.
But granted,
I mean,
if you're Undertaker, you're sitting at home, and, you know, it's Royal Rumble time. He's probably – oh, man, I got to get ready. I got to stop wearing Pinocchio shirts and get ready.
Does he have to, though? I mean – does he really, really have to do one more match?
He might have it in his contract. I don't know what his contract says. I frankly don't know. And maybe Brock said, I'll be gentle. I don't know, Dan. I don't know. It's like an episode of To Catch a Predator.
Well,
it weren't that bad.
No, that's okay. I'll give you that one.
If it's not going to be Brock, you know, the fantasy booking for me is make it Brian.
Sting.
I mean, you made him a heel now.
Stop with the sting.
Daniel Bryan. Why don't we talk about him then? I'm pretty sure it's going to be Brock. Daniel Bryan, what do you think? He's wrestling a Wyatt?
I think if
you guys like the Wyatt thing?
I do.
Yes, I love it.
Awful.
I love it.
I don't know if I love it, but...
Oh, I love it as long as it's a redemption thing. Like, let me rephrase that. I think it's just so he can come back. I don't know what you need to pop him any higher than he is, but...
my whole thing.
Yeah, I think it's just...
Steve Austin was... Let me get this out. Steve Austin was on Jericho, and he said he had the idea to turn heel at WrestleMania 17 because there wasn't a big moment planned.
Yeah.
McMahon was all behind it. So in the height of Austin's popularity, he turned heel. Sound familiar? And this was a tragic and utter failure.
Yeah.
I think the same is happening right now. The people that cared about Brian are, I know I am. I could care less now. He's in the main event. SummerSlam, he's in the main event.
He'll be back.
Now he's in the mid-card with Bray Wyatt, who I could care less about, no matter what anybody says.
He'll be back. I think he'll be all right, man.
Is it about...
I'm throwing down my pencil.
I think the potential is there to elevate both of them out of this.
I'm talking about track records. Now, if this was 1993, 1996, 1997, that era, I'd agree with you. I'd say, yeah, this is going to turn around. This is going to be good. If this was the Attitude Era, I'd say, yes, this is going to turn around. I'll even give you the Aggression Era. If this was the Aggression Era, I would go, yeah, this is going to turn around. This is going to be good. This modern era that they just start things and they finish them, and it doesn't make any sense.
Are you going to say this BS? To go back to the...
What I watched over the weekend?
Excuse me!
You know what I watched over the weekend, Dan?
What'd you watch?
New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Oh, yeah?
I watched Wrestle Kingdom 8. It was amazing. Top to bottom. I watched a Luke Gallows match and I was entertained, Dan.
Yeah.
A Luke Gallows match. Something WWE couldn't accomplish.
Luke Gallows got in the ring and was like, well, what else?
Don't ask me about names. I don't know names. I don't know enough about Prince Devitt is amazing. This match wasn't the best because there was so much going on with the Machine Club and whatever. But Prince Devitt is amazing. The main event was amazing. Don't ask me the names. NWA World Title Change.
What was the show again?
Wrestle Kingdom 8. It's their annual January 4th show. It happens every January 4th at the Tokyo Dome since 1992.
Wow.
And
that's
amazing.
Great.
Check that out.
That's a great company, dude.
The Time Splitters. It's Alex Shelley from Impact fame. I guess you could say New Japan Pro Wrestling fame at this point.
I was going to say, just...
And he's part of a tag team called the Time Splitters. It's a Back to the Future gimmick. And they come out in DeLorean. A freaking DeLorean.
They come out in the DeLorean? I'm watching it. That's it. Yes.
The tag team partner, Dan, is wearing Marty McFly's jacket.
Yes. Yuji Nagata's on this card. Great Muda.
There's two Gracies on the card, Dan.
Dude, look at this. Look at this card.
It's an amazing card.
Oh, my God. Hiroshi.
The Great Muda's on the card.
I just said that. Hiroshi Tenjan was on the card. Jushin Thunder Liger, Tiger Mask.
That was a pre-show match. Depending on where you find it, you might be able to get that match.
Where did you see this on YouTube?
Yes. Just think of it this way.
All right.
Just think of it this way, Dan. The card was so stacked.
Mm-hmm.
The NWA title match was third. Not only that, this card was so stacked. Jushin frickin' Thunder Liger was in a dark match.
That is...
Let that sink in.
And
And Taka Michinoku is on the card. I don't know where they're digging these people up, but it was amazing.
God, part two is 3 hours.
Indeed, Dan. It's a six-hour show.
Oh, God, I'm watching this so much. I'm
pressing
play
watch
right
it so hard.
I'm going to watch it so hard. I'm going to watch it so hard. I'm watching it right now. Press play.
It's really amazing. If you have the app on the YouTube app, watch it on YouTube on Xbox 360.
Nope, Star Batch is on here, brother.
Well, there you go.
Oh, this is great. Oh, my God.
And it's just the dark match.
Ugh.
Wait. But anyway.
Anyway, I'm glad you told me that.
It's an amazing card. It's an amazing card. Check it out. MLJ may not agree with me, but MLJ is kind of snobbish when it comes to wrestling.
Did he say something already?
Well, about that, we already talked about this previously, because the pay-per-view was...
Shut up, MLJ.
Well, the pay-per-view was Friday night into Saturday, Japanese time. And, you know, on point, everybody in the locker room's like, hey, did you check out Prince Devitt came out in a casket? Blah, and DeLoreans. And
I just want to see the DeLorean.
It's like Christmas.
I'm going to watch a whole show for a car.
Well, it's the first match, so you don't have too far to go. Dan, watch the main event was amazing.
No, I'm going to watch the whole thing because I know all these names. From where? WCW, baby!
You had to.
I did. Yeah. You could have ended the show, but you decided not to.
I hate you so much, Rachel. But next week, a night of ultra-violent comedy with Chris Rivera and the Reverend Bob Levy.
Oh, boy.
Next week, this weekend, I will be part of it. Will you, Dan? I believe you're formatting it as we speak.
Yes. Are you going to be part of it?
Yeah, I have nothing to do this weekend, man.
I asked him, do you have any,
He wants to talk about Jared or something, from what I understand.
I swear to God, if you
We're taking over the show, quite frankly.
I swear to God, if he mentions anything that is mentioned today, I'm going to take him out
hang
over
up.
Here.
Yeah, no, hang up.
Oh.
Hang up. It's not worth arguing on air, just hang up. Doesn't matter, that was my whole
going
point.
Going down, Harry.
That was my whole point of what today was. He's a limp of a limp. Well, he's limp too, but he's a lump of Limburger cheese. Always going for that alliteration. I'm the Ayatollah of alliteration. I am the Dean of Credibility, Double D. You can find me at Folsom County.
Beautiful.
Now.
Could have kept going, but you stopped. Go.
No,
on,
Omega,
go.
Where can the fine people find you?
Follow me on Twitter at Omega Squad.
Follow me on Twitter at DanLaw83 and Obey Pup Show.
When is that, Dan?
Monday nights at 9 on the Hell in a Cell Talk Radio Network.
That's right. And, of course, after midnight, we'll return on the 18th. That will be MLJ and myself. We'll have some we'll talk about On Point Wrestling in a little more detail. Personally, my favorite match was Jaka against Joey Janela. Again, alliteration. That's probably why it was my favorite match. I don't know. There was a lot of J's, but
he's a jam up guy, isn't he?
Who are you? Who are you? But we're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about this fantastic New Japan Pro Wrestling card.
Yeah,
and whatever else strikes our fancy.
You know what? We're talking about that this Saturday. Or do you want to save it for next week?
It depends if Harry watches it. I don't want it just. We'll have it saved.
Okay.
If you watch it and...
I'm watching it. Dude, I'm going to watch the whole thing.
And I'll watch it again just to have a fresh perspective. But not only that, make sure you check out On Point Wrestling or Webs. Or what is their website, Dan? OnPointWrestling.webs.com? I think that's what it is. I know it's a Webs.
Stall on that for a second.
Well, make sure you check out DanSeverin.com.
If you go to OnPointWrestling.com, it still brings you to the regular...
Well, that's a different one. That's not the one that they update. That's the old one. I don't know why they don't update that one, but they have the other one. OnPointWrestling.webs.com, I believe it is. But check that out.
With a Z or an S?
An S. Webs. W-E-B-S. On Point Wrestling.
Yep, that's it. OnPointWrestling.webs.com.
Lucha-Rock.com. Download the album, $9, and you can have such wonderful tunes You hear them right here on HIAC Talk Radio. And, of course, you can check out the website that is updated quite more frequently. Justin America, of course, put some gamer reviews up there. He recently reviewed Assassin's Creed 4. Check that out. Indie Power Rankings are also on there. Check them out at Facebook/IndiePowerRankings and check them out on Facebook at Indie Power Ranking. No G or S, just stops at the end. Kind of like On Point Wrestling on Twitter. But you can also check us out at facebook.com/HIAC Talk Radio. Of course, the Twitter is at HIAC Talk Radio. We return next week with a night of ultraviolet comedy. I don't even know what to expect, quite frankly.
Oh, boy. One show you might not plan, sir.
Dan returns Obey the Puck Monday at 9.
We are
here at 5:30, is it?
Wait.
For what's wrong with
that? Saturday night, 5:30. Monday night, we will be reviewing the Olympic hockey schedule. I'll throw that out there.
Sounds like a barn burner.
I hate you.
But on that note, luck be a lady.
Just how nice a dame you can be. I know the way you've treated other guys you've been with. Hey, luck be a lady with me. A lady doesn't leave her escort. It isn't fair, and it's not nice. A lady doesn't wander all over the room and blow on some other guy's dice. So let's keep the party polite. Never get out of my sight. Stick with me, baby, I'm the guy that you came in with. Luck be a lady. Luck be a lady.